If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Mackhams around the world, welcome along to the Mackham Football Show. I'm Anthony Mackham. Today I'm joined with RWA, Brad from RWA, and the Mackham Cabbie. Welcome along, boys. How are we feeling?
Hello, yeah, nice and relaxed. Very nice, thank you.
Good evening. I'm feeling very calm, feeling very happy. Very happy.
Very happy. I might dampen your mood a little bit, mate, because we do have to catch up on the Cardiff game a little bit, so we'll try and skip over that because I think my overall theme is we played good but we didn't get the result. That's essentially my one sentence synopsis on that one. But then we are going to proper deep dive into that Sheffield Wednesday win on Friday evening. So yeah, that's why this podcast's a little bit later than the normal Friday show. We played a game on it and obviously the watch-alongs take priority over the podcast, so yeah, the lads did us proud on Friday evening. But yes, thoughts about the Cardiff game. What there's two questions. What was really good about it, and what was obviously the bad? What was bad about it for you? We'll go with Brad first, and then we'll move on to Gabby.
Last Sunday, wasn't it? Trying to think,
because it was late
last Sunday.
We've slept for nearly a week now.
Yeah. Didn't Cardiff score on like the 87th minute, something like that, if I remember rightly?
Yep. So before that point, they had no shots on target. By the end of the game, they had three or four. It was four, and three of them were in the 91st, 93rd, 95th minute. So they scored the goal, and their tails were up, and they were on the attack after that, which was very strange. But yeah.
Well, if I remember rightly, I think we dominated quite the majority of the game, to be honest. But mm-hmm. Yeah, Cardiff like had a shot on target, but actually went in the back of the net, which their manager was very, very surprised for, because apparently he turned around and went something like Sunderland's one of the bestest football clubs in the Championship or something like that. I think he turned around and said after the game.
I really hope he did it in like a Monsters Inc. style voice. He's your bestest team.
Yeah. Overall, I think we should have deserved to win that game, to be honest. We should have put our chances away, but we didn't.
Mm. So. Yeah. Is it just one of those, right, for you?
Yeah, it's one of those for me. It's one of those fuck up games, kind of.
Cappy? What are you saying, buddy?
About the Cardiff game.
Like, I want to get this out and out the way with as quickly as possible on the pod, because yeah.
Look, I just think it was one of them games where every single team in the Football League goes through from time to time, where you just completely dominate. But for some strange reason, the Gremlins that'll be will just not let the ball cross the line. That will just, it's just one of those things. I think Sunderland played well for the full 90 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought, like I said, tried to walk the ball in the net and it wasn't working. Jack Clark was being a bit too ball greedy. They just switched off the last few minutes, and they obviously got the goal from it. Like, but I'm certainly not worried from it. I wasn't really that concerned afterwards because of the fact, like, the way we played. Like I say, every team goes through that, and that'll probably happen again to us. And we'll probably play oppositions. I mean, look at that time when we played Man City where G. Domong, it was like 94 minutes. Man City completely just dominated us. We went in and scored. It happens.
It's over a decade ago now, that. It's,
I remember. It's, like, it was yesterday.
So do I, because I was in Birmingham City Centre with my family because they came down from the northeast. So we went to like... Well, it was pretty much... It was a Birmingham bar, but it was full of full of Manchester fans, so it's kind of a strange atmosphere. So I remember it because it was New Year's Day as well, wasn't it? It was like the day of New Year's Day.
I've still got the gravy stains on the ceiling when I took me Sunday dinner in the air. I was at home and I went absolutely ballistic.
Yeah.
But it happens, doesn't it? I know it's 10 years ago, but just giving an example, it's like sometimes you just don't get the rub of the green.
Yeah, it is fortune sometimes just doesn't go our way. Yorkshire said in the chat, we were the better team in the Cardiff game and it was just frustrating the way we conceded. For me, it was kind of like, it was completely out of the blue. Cardiff, I didn't think they were going to even shoot in the entire 90, which obviously very strange when, I don't know, it was just one of those games where like if we buried a chance early doors like we have in most games, it was ours and we were going to walk it. But yeah, like you said, it's sometimes it's just not in the cards. Uploads, welcome along. We have a habit of the games that we're losing playing really well though this season. We've got the first two games where we lost by 2-1, 2-1, and then this one just the 1-0. So we're not like, when we're losing, we're not looking like a poor side. Not by any stretch of the imagination. It does seem like the three games that we've lost so far, it is just that bit of fortune and bit of unluckiness to me. Like I said, with the Preston and Ipswich games a couple of weeks back now, like it was just those deflections, those switching off in key moments. And this Cardiff game, again, is one of those ones where I think we switched off at the one opportunity, like giving away that corner, not ideal, but they happen. And that's how we defend from that. The way Patterson went for his save, there was murmurs afterwards online around his back being potentially injured or something like that. I think you brought that up on one of your podcasts, Brad, as well. So I thought maybe that would lead to Bishop potentially getting a starting position, but must have been a slight knock or a slight like muscle twinge on the day, because obviously he performed really well on the weekend against Sheffield Wednesday. So Upload says, sorry, got to go to my granddad's 90th birthday party. Happy birthday to Upload's granddad. That's cool. 90 is no mean feat, mate. Enjoy the party. So we went into the game, the second game, shall we say, of this week, this podcast, Sheffield Wednesday, trying to correct a couple of early door mistakes. And I was thinking there's going to be a lot more changes based on how Sheffield Wednesday were going to set themselves up against what we played against in the Cardiff game, because we were bombarding that Cardiff team. It just wasn't going in. The fact that there wasn't many changes, we slightly tweaked our formation to a 4-1-4-1 against Sheffield Wednesday, which I think may have like created the earlier chances and early goals. But the thing that I think massively swayed that game, and we've got to get the elephant out of the room, was that statement by the chairman from Sheffield Wednesday. Are either you two aware of what happened in that statement?
No.
Quite. Abby, did you see the statement from the owner of Sheffield Wednesday?
The Sheffield Wednesday, wasn't it something regarding about protesting without causing any damage or something like that? Because last few games have been hoying loads of tennis balls on the pitch, disrupting the game.
Yeah, that's yes, it was a little bit of that. It was a little bit of that. So long and short of it, he's saying he's getting threats, his family's getting threats, and the protests are causing issues with that. The fans are not giving them enough money. That's why the ticket prices are so high, and they can reduce. Like basically, he's rooting all the problems to the fans rather than his leadership and his ownership. Which...
Yes, I did hear about that. Yeah, I did hear about that. Apparently, he's not putting any more money into the club.
He's not going to put a single more. He's not going to put a single penny into that club. And this was released about 7 hours before the game. Yeah, bad move. Let's put it that way. So,
yeah,
I don't know if that had a massive impact on the morale of the players going into the game. maybe. But I think we just went out and just went, let's not beat around the bush. Let's just attack at them. And you could see from like the opening goal that the corner conceded was daft, but the delivery, we scored directly from a corner. When was the last time you can remember that happening? Like, I genuinely can't off the top of my memory recall when we scored directly from a free kick, from a corner.
Last night was a good goal by Dan Ballard. Really good goal.
Really good. Yeah, agreed. Cabby, can you remember another goal directly from a free kick?
Only one that comes to mind was Amad Diallo's.
Was that direct from the free kick, or was it like two free balls around the edge of the box and then in?
It was straight from a free kick. It was just a clean shot.
Yeah.
Was it Stadium Light? We just rifled it.
A free, not that from a corner, not a free kick. Sorry.
From a corner.
Did I see a set piece?
Yeah.
Sorry. I think we've scored a fair few good quality free kicks in our time, though. Without a doubt.
It hasn't been that long ago we have scored from a corner.
I think we had 29 games before we scored from a set piece last season. From a corner set piece, and I think that was against Hull, maybe?
Was that in the 4-4 draw?
No, it was in the one in December.
Oh, down at their stadium.
Yeah, one goal before Embleton went off injured for the rest of the season. Was it Embleton? Yeah, it was Embleton, wasn't it, that went off injured? Yeah.
Yeah, you got a red card as well, I remember that.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Jacob's in the chat saying that Cardiff are now on the same points as us. They've had some good results, including Leeds away. So, Cardiff are in the playoff zone now. We're still above them, but yeah, terrible. Terrible result if you're looking at it on the end of the day. Like, we should be beating that Cardiff team, really, 9 times out of 10. But yeah, we're talking about the Sheffield Wednesday game now. So they had that horrible, weird ownership statement come out. Then the heads dropped. We score a goal directly from a set piece in the first couple of minutes. Then I don't even know how to describe it. It was like with his delivery to Clark, and then Clark's just freedom to to dart into the box, like the thing he likes to do the most, ends up in our second goal. Jacob's asking, what did you think of Burstow last night? I think he's unsung a little bit. I thought he had a really good game. He just didn't put the ball in the back of the net.
It was Burstow.
It was a really good ball, but like you expect the striker to be further up the pitch, right? That's
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cabby, thoughts on Burstow?
I thought it was his best game for us, to be honest with you. I mean, yeah, I know he didn't score, but his off the ball movement and stuff was quality. He was causing Sheffield Wednesday a lot of problems throughout the night. Including the penalty, leading up to the penalty. So, you can only get more confidence as the season goes on.
That's what I was just about to say as well. I was going to mention that as well from the penalty shout up. We had good movement by Burstow in the box. Obviously, be brought down to bring a penalty because it was a good pass by, I think it was Patrick Robert who brought him in. I think it was.
Yeah, it was a cut through. It was a very, through the middle cut. Direct, like knife through butter kind of pass into the box, and then the defender just drags him down. Anybody who's trying to claim, oh, he's diving, or it's a soft penalty to give away, is just not really looking at it. Like, use your eyes. You can see the defender's panicking and just yanks at Burstow's shirt for Sullinsford. Diaby, that was it. He should have been sent off at some point as well. The amount of fouls he was committing in the second half, he needs somebody in the head.
Was Burstow on the head as well?
Mm-hmm. It's like, that's fine because he's on the yellow card. Come on. The referee, I think, was just feeling a bit sorry for them, to be honest. But, I think we felt a little bit sorry for them after going 3-0 up before half-time as well, because second half, I'll go into my thoughts about the second half, but what are yours?
I thought we had more possession second half. To be honest, I thought we moved the ball around quite well. And had a few open shots what we could have scored, but obviously they didn't take their chances like we did at Cardiff. So, fair play to us at the end of the day for getting that result down at Hillsborough. So,
yeah, okay. Cabby, what were your thoughts on the second half in that Chef Wed game?
We could have had a game of chess and not even missed out, to be honest with you. I think they, it was just done and dusted, wasn't it, the first half? And yes, I know a lot of people saying, let's do our goal difference, the world of good, but having fit players and energies more is just can be just as more important than goal difference and stuff. It was they weren't going to score on a month of Sundays, Sheffield Wednesday. I wasn't at all panicking at all. And I just thought, yeah, see the game out. You know, we've got a bit of a break now till Wednesday. Why risk any fatigue or injuries?
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it was just nothing wrong with it at all. I was expecting it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I was surprised that we didn't make any changes at halftime to do that prevention of injuries. But we did make a couple of subs in the second half. What do you make of them? You've had Rig, Roussian, Oshish, and Barkamon in the second half, I believe. I, if I'm missing anybody out, I'll have to pull up the stats, but...
Oh, you got them totally correct.
Perfect. Oh, it's the first time for everything. I genuinely thought our entire team's second half performance was second gear at best. We didn't want to exert too much energy, and I get it because that like we had a very short gap between our previous game and this one, the Cardiff and this game. So I completely understand that, but it's more, what do we do? Do we like Cabby just said, do we try and like completely batter them to get more goal difference, or do we just take the 3 points and see where that lands us? Because if you're watching this live right now, welcome along Acacia and Pongo, welcome along. The goal difference for Sunderland, we have the best goal difference in the league right now. I know that's not points, that's not wins, it's nothing like that, but we do literally have the best goal difference. Plus 10, we're the only team in double digits. That's got to be said for something. We didn't really need to keep attacking and getting higher and higher because we're already the best at that. Right? Do you think that was something Mowbray would have discussed? Gabby, I'll let you go on that one. Second half, half-time team talk, do you think Mowbray would have said... Reserve your energy. Like, try and get another goal if you want to, but don't exert yourself.
I think a bit of both, and I think a lot of common sense with the players would have just realised themselves. Like, let's just take it easy, lads. We've done the hard work first half. We've got this one. I don't think they took the foot off the gas 100% completely. You know, they were still sort of alert in the back because they stopped Sheffield Wednesday from scoring. I think it was the case of more going forward and pressing what they sort of slacked off a bit on. But as a defender, I still think they're very much switched on at the back.
Oh, yeah, massively. Like, our defenders in that game, unreal, really. 09 and Ballard, standout performances. Like, if you're keeping clean sheets, that's our third clean sheet. So basically, one in every three games so far has been the clean sheet. I'm pretty impressed with how that's lining out. I'm still not 100% on Luke O'Neill being a fixed centre-back going forward, but it's working, and why change it while it's still fully functional? Do you agree with that, Brad? Brad?
I'm on mute. I think I'm not on mute.
Yeah, you're not on mute anymore now.
What were you saying there? I'm sorry.
So, that mute thing's completely from my mind now. I had a good question as well. No, it's the defenders being like as they are, keeping free clean sheets. Do you think that's something we need to like keep going with, or can we start tinkering with it soon? Or what are we waiting for before we bring in the likes of Sealt or Triantus to replace them?
Well, the thing is, if obviously it's working, you would keep on going with it, wouldn't you? It's obvious you would keep on going with it. You wouldn't tinker it and bring in another centre defender. Do you agree, or?
I kind of feel sorry for Sealt and Triantus in that they were brought in for being tall centre backs. We've had Ekwa get injured, and let's face it, Luke O'Nine will play anywhere, right? So you can push him further up if you still want to keep him in the starting lineup and put one of those two to try and break out. That's good. Yeah. Cabby?
Hello.
What do you think of the back line? Would you change anything, or would you? What do you think Mowbray's thoughts are on the back line right now?
Well, I mean, I think, to be honest with you, I think as long as Dan Ballard's fit, will look quite solid because, like I say, I think he's a leader, especially at the back. The last few games, he's been absolutely immense. He really, really has, and I wouldn't change anything at the back, to be quite honest with you. It seems to be gelling and working well. I know the Cardiff game, but it was just a case of like we pressured them for that much of the game. It was just a minute of switching off, and it was that sort of end of the game, we'll get a point sort of thing, you know what I mean? And it always seems to happen, doesn't it, when there's like just a minute or so left, teams switch off thinking that's it, and it isn't. But no.
Yeah.
Bring the changes. I think if anything happens to Ballard, then I would sort of bring some changes in. But at the moment, we're quite solid.
Yeah. So you're pretty much on the mindset of keep it as it is until an injury kind of forces it, or fatigue.
Yeah. I would say so. Definitely.
Cool. To the other end of the pitch, and I'm going to bring up Jim's comment here. Mowbray said, being greedy, he would have liked to see more goals in post-match statements. So. The thing that statement brings me on to, Jim, by the way, welcome along, is how are we going to bring these strikers into the fold? Because we have 18 goals in this league in 9 games. That's one in every two goals a game. insane. How are we going to get the strikers contributing towards that? Because at the minute, we're kind of self-sufficient with all of our midfielders. You've got... Bellingham, Clark, Roberts, Pritchard, Ballard, Dak. Like, we've got goals coming around the pitch, but not Ruchin, not Burstow, and not Hamia yet. How do we get those free scoring goals? That's their job. Go on, Brad. How do we get the strikers in the fold?
Really hard to say that question, to be honest, but if you're obviously starting Mason Burstow, wouldn't you start someone up against them as well? Wouldn't you play two up front? Like, you play one maybe strikers alongside him? Wouldn't you play Russian, or wouldn't you play Semedo alongside him? For me it would be Burstow and Russian, whatever you want to call it.
So change it from the one up front to a dual partnership again.
Yeah, dual partnership, I think the two up top will work more better. And I think we'll get more goals if it works that way. To be honest, I think we'll get more goals.
Yeah, but like I said, we've got goals from around the pitch now, and Ballard contributing in that as well. I think...
Yeah, well, look as well, yeah. You've got the goals around the pitch. Obviously, you've got Jack Clark, Patrick Roberts on the wings, who can get a goal or two per game. Yeah. Every couple of games. And you've got, obviously, Job, who scored a couple of goals this season.
Yeah,
Ballard has actually scored a couple of goals this season. So you've got a lot of like players around the pitch, what you've said, who can actually pin in the goals. So, yeah.
There's a lot of messages pop through, and I can see Cabby's one of them. So, Cabby, get yourself off mute for a second. Kirsch is saying, honestly, that game at Chef Wed last night was amazing. I was there. Obviously, Kirsch is kind of a Blades and a Sunderland fan at the same time. So, Sunderland beating Sheffield rivals is just funny. The striker issue, Cabby, who do you fit? How do we get those guys involved? I've got a very easy answer to get them. And welcome along, Ranks from Chicago. But yeah, Cabby.
Hello.
How do we get the strikers on the score sheet for us? How do we change our game plan?
Well, I mean, to be honest with you, I don't think we really have that much of a problem scoring on goals. I mean, look how many goals we've scored in the last few games. I think it's working just fine. Just need little tweaks, like I brought up a few times, the likes of Jack Clark and Robertson Courts. Like, if that isn't working, just pass the ball a little bit more. Maybe bring the likes of the oil rig in a bit earlier, give him a bit more game time. Obviously, we've got Russian now coming in.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't honestly change that much. Like I say, I mean, when was the last time in this position we've scored a lot more goals than we've let in, which the table doesn't lie. The stats don't lie. So it is obviously working. So I wouldn't really leave that change that much, to be honest with you. I think we're doing fine as well as the back. We're doing just as good up front.
Yeah, I've said this a couple of times. I think Leicester will absolutely walk this league. They're not missing.
They'll do what Burnley did, won't they? They'll do what Burnley did the last season.
Yeah, but I think we're the new Sheffield United of this season. We are the team that's up and coming. We're on the ascendancy. Teams are finding it difficult. Like, we will get beaten. We can't win every single game, but we haven't had a single poor performance so far. So we've had poor results, but not a poor performance, whereas every other team has had terrible, terrible performances and some good results to back them up. Case in point.
Well, if we could fast forward to the end of the season now and we were in the playoffs, the teams around us that would be playing the playoffs, I wouldn't be scared of any of them.
Preston would be my biggest fear of those three other teams right now. But yeah. Shall I give you my answer, by the way, for how we get the strikers involved? Which, again, I don't know why we did. So Burstow goes down for the penalty, and Clark takes it. Clark's obviously on fire. He's the club's top scorer. He would have remained top scorer this weekend with 6, but obviously he's now on 7. But win a penalty, you take it if you feel fit for it. I know we've got the Clark's got to keep taking the penalties until he misses one, but I kind of feel like if you've earned it, you get it. You were about to have the shot, or you were about to provide another goal for us or an assist. You should get that penalty, and that gets him on the score sheet. That gets his confidence going. He's scoring for someone now. Doesn't matter how he gets that ball in the back of the net; it's on his tally. So yeah. that's the easiest way. If we can get get penalties, very rare someone get penalties. Bear in mind, give them to the strikers. Like, that's
we've had 2 this season, so.
Yeah, exactly. And both of them have been converted by Clark. So, like, I can't knock it because obviously he's scoring them. But if we want to boost the confidence of those strikers, but also to the other side of that, actually, I'm just like caveating myself here. What happens if you give it to them and they completely duff it?
That's a problem.
Would that break their spirit completely, and we're just not play them for the rest of the season at that point? Jim says, think Tony Mowbray is persisting with Burstow as he has a lot of potential and will add Roushan when he thinks he's ready. I think the only reason Roushan's not starting is his language barrier, right? He's playing 20 minutes. We've given him a good like prep into the game and saying this is your game plan for 20 minutes and just let them go at it for that 20 minutes where he doesn't need to adjust.
I thought he was alright.
Yeah, it was half decent. Welcome along, Brad. How you doing? No, Brad. Paul. Paul. I just saw your icon move and Paul's been replaced.
Evening, Paul.
Yep.
Yeah. Welcome along. Ranks asks a question here. True question. Do we need to get the strikers scoring? Burstow helped create each goal yesterday without actually scoring themselves. If they score, great. If not, they contribute opening up space. So, this is kind of like getting the CEO to answer the phones at a business. Like, yeah, they can do the job. They know exactly what needs to be done, but the resource could be better distributed if it's given to the person who's supposed to be doing that function, that role. So yeah, like I said, the more goals we're scoring, the absolute better. It doesn't matter how it goes in the back of the net for us. But for the structure of the club, right, it makes sense to get the people who are supposed to be scoring goals, scoring goals. What's your thoughts on that? Go with Paul, because he's just joined. What are your thoughts on getting strikers scoring for us, mate?
Well, in a way, they need to, you know, in a way, they need to, you know, it'd be interesting actually what they're doing, actually in training, actually. Yeah, because, you know, Mobis keep coming out and saying, you know, the first us actually hitting the ball, you know, right, but in training, but it'd be interesting actually what the others are doing.
Yeah. I think training's a different kettle of fish completely, though, right? You can absolutely slap every single ball in the back of the net in training, but when it comes to the actual game time, you're not performing. A good example of somebody who was really, really shit hot in training but never actually scored was Josie Alderdor. He was amazing in training for us back in the day, but never delivered on the pitch. I'm using old references here, but like, training for me is training. It's not the actual real deal.
Yeah, I agree with that. Do you not think? Well, I was actually speaking to Lee actually on it, and I said to Lee, do you not think Morby needs to try out? I don't know, but like, say, like the other strikers. I know we're playing Burstow a lot, but yeah, do you not think we need to give? I don't know, but say like Rossi and some time, you know. I know he's just come in, but there must be a reason why Morby is actually playing Burstow a lot.
I think it's because he prefers him and he's got a positive attitude. It could be as simple as that.
I think with Russian and all, I think it all comes down with language barriers. What Amps just said before, like literally, like was it 2 or 3 minutes ago?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, but the thing is on that, we've actually got a player that speaks his language actually in the club.
Who's that?
I'm not sure it is. But
it's an under-21s kid. He's Ukrainian. They speak the same language, so they're using him as his translator. It's very strange. Very strange, but there is a person in place.
I know this. I think it's Timo Turtov.
That's it. Yeah. That's it. Yeah, that's him. Timo. So Keisha says, I definitely think Mowbray needs to start sealed more this season since he came in second half, and Nectar Triantis as well, to get a game. Otherwise, why did we get him in the first place? It's that catch 22. You don't want to... We are so good defensively right now. Yeah, we have a couple of blips. Every team will have blips. Look at Man City. They're the best team in the country, possibly even like the club, best club in the world, and they still concede goals. Like, you're never going to get 100% squeaky clean defense, regardless of who you are. So,
I'm not sounding silly here, but I think we're acting like, you know, like Sheffield United did last season. Like, I think
what do you mean?
Like, you know how Sheffield United keep on like winning games and the loss got 1 or 2 and started winning games again. Like that.
Yeah, so we're basically on form to be the second best team in the league.
Yeah, so we're playing like Sheffield United did last season.
I'm all right with that, mate. Second's still automatic, so I'll be chuffed with that. My goal for the season for this club was basically finish on match or better what we did last season, because otherwise that's not a sign of progress. I think we're already 2 points ahead of where we're at. If we beat Watford, we'll be 5 points ahead. So we could even lose this game and be better off than we were last season.
Tell you what, speaking of Watford, I was keeping a well eye actually on that game this afternoon.
Yeah. Well, we're about half an hour into this podcast now, so we can talk about the week ahead then. We've also got
two games.
Sorry?
Got two games next week. We've got the Watford game and the Middlesbrough game.
Yeah. So the Watford game, I was a little bit pessimistic going into it about, but the fact that they've just conceded 3 goals against Middlesbrough, who, let's face it, have been poor this season. They've lost to I get Michael Carrick is a really good tactician, but the club, Middlesbrough, the Smoggies are just, they're not firing on all cylinders right now. And the fact that they've conceded three against them shows me if we go with our current game plan, we should be absolutely fine against this Watford team. I don't want to be cocky. I don't want to jinx it because, like I said, we could play like we did against Cardiff and slip it to a 1-0, but there's no reason we can't beat this Watford team. I'll let Cabby, do you want to jump in there? What do you think to the week ahead against Cardiff, against Watford first and foremost?
Nothing to be afraid of Watford. I mean, they're not the side they were when they first got relegated.
Mm-hmm.
They had a decent side and, we got two draws, didn't we? Oh, I'm unaware.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're both the same scoreline as well, if I think 2-2. Mm-hmm. But there's nothing to be afraid of Watford at all, without a shadow of a doubt. As a matter of fact, I think it's not just our form, but I think how good our squad is and the team has actually overtook Watford by quite some margin. I think we'll do a good job on them. If we keep, there's no reason why we can't put it that way. I mean, Middlesbrough, yeah, done them on their home ground.
Mm-hmm.
I'm quite optimistic about with that game. It's on Wednesday, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a Wednesday evening game. I'm not sure if it's on TV or not, but I think SAFC will get it covered.
Red button.
On the red button, so it will be covered by Sky Sports.
I just want us to like sort of bury the hatchet again with like our home performances, and that I would need to start. I know it's not too bad at the minute, but our performances seem to be standing out still when we're away from home. I would like us to start getting some regular points on the board in our home games as well, and and a lot of people saying, like, you know, it's quite hostile, the Stadium of Light at the minute. It's really quiet, you know, and I think the fans sort of sometimes can feed onto the team and give the team a lot of pressure. I think that's one of the reasons as well why we're maybe not as good at home. But I think if we can start off early, like we did against Southampton, then the Stadium of Light will erupt and the noise will build, and I think Sunderland will feed from there. But the longer it goes 0-0, the more quiet and nervy the Stadium of Light gets, and I think that's what's against the team at the moment.
Ooh, that's a really good point. I'm trying to think of how to retort to that, but we do seem to perform and get better results if we are scoring in the first half. It's kind of obvious to do that, but yeah, I really, really, really good point. Paul, I can see Brad's gone off to set up his podcast probably now and get his tea. What are your thoughts on the game ahead against Watford? And I'll catch up on chat straight after your point as well.
To be honest, I'm not actually worried about Watford, actually. You know, because, well, fair enough, they played today, but like we played yesterday. So,
mm-hmm,
in a way, I know they'll have Watford will have, I'm just trying to think, they'll have yesterday off, Monday.
Mm-hmm.
They'll put me back in Tuesday. But like, yeah, Morby would have given, you know, Morby actually would have given our lads a couple of days off. Yeah, but I wouldn't be surprised if he's already looked, you know, straight at Watford. But for me, you know, because I actually said to a friend of mine actually before the game yesterday, because he said to me, what do you think the team would be? And I said to him, I would only make one change. And actually that was the change of Roberts. And, you know, after the game I messaged him and I said, I actually got that spot on. And for me, for Wednesday, I don't think Morby will change it.
I think he can, though, if he wants to start like bringing in some of the academy players, because they are on fire as well. They've got loads of banks of options to feed through into the first team. Just, yeah, was it our under-21s against West Ham's under-21s? And we go 2-0 behind and end up winning 3-2 in that. Just shows that there's just that gut and determination at all levels in our club to fight for everything. So it's kind of, I don't know. If he wants to make some changes, he can. If he wants to rest some players, he can. That's a really nice luxury to have now. We never really had that for a long, long time.
So yeah, no, it will be interesting what he does. Because, well, fair enough, Wednesday's on the red button.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, Saturday's game's actually live on Sky. So,
yeah.
It will be interesting what he does, you know, Wednesday to Saturday, what he does with the squad. You know, will he change things up on Wednesday, or, you know, will he rest some players, keeping them for Middlesbrough?
Good point. And Acacia's correct me, it was Villa under 23s as well, by the way. There's a lot of potential options. Ranks brings up, so this is me catching up on the chat, but also kind of tying that in. He says, we don't want to wind up like we did at the end of last season. If we had two more defenders last season, I genuinely think we would have gone up. And we've already started to get like an injury prone list, but we've got two players in every single position. It's when those two players get injured. So at the minute, Dak's a prime example of that. Dak, I think, is a really good player, can kick on for us. Yeah, he's only here for a season so far. That might extend, but we've got Pritchard to replace him. And it's the same for the likes of... I wouldn't say that we've got a direct replacement for Clark, because I don't think anybody could, but Abdullah Bar getting injured, you've got Robertson in the wings waiting for him, or vice versa. There's just... every single position seems to have a backup. The one exception of that is CDM. We've got Neil and Ekwar, who are our preferred CDMs. And if, at the minute, Ekwar's injured with a short-term injury, but if Neil goes off as well, we have to completely change our formation and our play style, because that holding defensive midfield is no longer there to support our attack. We might push further up the field, although maybe, like I said, push Lugo 9 into that CDM position and pop one of those by trade centre backs in that position. So,
yeah. In a way, I'm pleased with I'm happy actually with what Mowbray actually said about Ekwa actually. Because I know Ekwa wasn't available yesterday, but Mowbray said if Ekwa is actually okay,
yeah,
because I think he's going to check on him on Monday. But okay. Mowbray said actually if he's all right. Mowbray said he might, depending on how he is, he could be available for Wednesday.
Yeah. Okay. I'd rather have him be 100% fit than about 70% fit and coming back in and risking that injury, though. So I just think it's a smarter move for us. We've got the luxury of having a replacement keep them until they're 100%. That's my thought on that. So Steve-O has said he's lurking. Welcome along. Niall has popped in and says, Hi, Anth mate. Do you reckon we'll get Ahmad back possibly in January? Ooh, see, I think Ahmad wants him back. We want him back, but we can't afford the Manchester United wages for him. So there's got to be some compromise there. But also, if we do get the likes of Ahmed back on loan, we can get a loan here at any point, by the way. It has to be classed as an emergency loan. So if you have two injuries or a position that's completely out of whack and we've got no replacement options, we can get a player in. I'd love to see him back at the club, but right now we don't need him. We genuinely don't need him. Oh, yeah, there's a point. The only time we would need them, it says, I'm afraid of losing Clark in January. That could be the real road for our entire season. But if we sell Clark, we could get the market value for Ahmad. And I think if we offer Ahmad and Manchester United, the swap for that salary, whatever we get for Jack Clark's salary with the fees and stuff like that, we will directly swap with Ahmad Diallo and get him game time. That's an option. So, yeah, there's just a lot happening at the club, and it's all positive, essentially. The point around the strikers as well, them not firing on and not providing us goals yet, for me, would have been a concern if we weren't so high in the league and getting results. The fact that we're doing both those things allows us to then have another level to step up to. We know as a club we can perform better once everybody's firing on all cylinders. Could you imagine, like, the defenders coming up against Bellingham, Clark, Roberts, Ekwa, basically our entire midfield, and then also our strikers firing at them as well, just goals popping in left, right, and centre. We're gonna, as soon as everybody's on fire, we're gonna have a really good season.
Be honest, that's why I'm actually looking forward to the Birmingham game.
Yeah,
because can you imagine Joe Bellingham, playing against his former team, and because I know Acacia was actually at the game yesterday, and Acacia told me apparently that Jack Clark actually got abuse. Off the Chef Wed supporters yesterday.
Oh, he'll brush that off, no problem, mate. Like, he doesn't care. He scored two goals. That's him sticking both his middle fingers up at them. There's one for that goal and one for that goal. Who cares what you think? But you said about Job there playing against Birmingham. Jim pops in the chat. Job is getting better at that CDM role. Do you think that could be his position going forward, or do you think that would be a waste of his natural skill set? Cabby, I'll let you answer that one. Do you think Joe Bellingham should be CDM, or do you think he should be played at his natural position, which is cam, I think?
Their natural position, to be honest with you. It's, like I said, if one doesn't work, then be versatile at playing the other one, then, you know, play him there. There's a good player in there. Absolutely, he's very, very young, and to just keep playing him in the position he's at. Like I say, we're lucky he can play in both. And yeah, there's nothing wrong with the way he's playing at the moment. I don't think there's anything to worry about.
Perfect. I'm just laughing at your comment, mate. I'm not going to read it out because I don't do that on this channel.
No, that's fine. I'm just giving you a bit of support.
Thank you very much. That's what everybody with the blue spanner is there for, to help me, help us grow the community, innit? There you go. Oh, Acacia's comments just got me a little bit angry there. Not what Acacia's saying, but I've got to bring it up again. We were talking about such positive things, and then this one's just caught my eye. The Sheffield Wednesday fans with the phone. If I just say it like that, would you know what I'm talking about?
I know exactly what you're on about, because I actually sent you the photograph.
Yeah. Yeah, Cabby, do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I've known for about an hour and a bit now, yeah.
Yeah, so for those that are listening back and what have you, basically two Sheffield Wednesday fans held up a phone with the picture of Bradley Lowry and trying to use it as like a weapon to mock our fans and our players. They're just getting lynched online. But that kind of, there's banter at football, and I get it. Like, who are you kind of back and forth with clubs? That always happens. That, for me, is absolutely run-of-the-mill fine. But when you start... Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But when you take it to the level of the death of a child from cancer and you're laughing at that, like, what kind of deplorable human being can you be? It's one of those...
You mentioned about a weapon. Like against the Sunderland fans. The daftest thing is, what they don't realise is they've actually used the weapon on themselves, because it's all that's going to do is just backfire hugely.
It has.
Not just unfortunately for Sheffield Wednesday Football Club, but them two lads as well, and the fans. So they might as well have just sent a Scud missile, and it's just turned round and it's just coming straight away and just hit them straight all back. It's absolutely ridiculous.
It's embarrassing, and I think it's not uncommon, though.
It's as if Sheffield Wednesday is not going through enough trouble, as it is, you know, like depressing times, and the last thing they need is that, because the minority again, isn't it? Makes the club look bad, as it always bloody is.
There's some kind of ironic things around that as well. Obviously, the rest of the Sheffield Wednesday fans are completely disowning them. But they were in your stand, wearing your shirts, representing your club. Like, we have had crap fans in the past, and we've disowned them as well. Like, we're not completely unscathed in that regard, but one individual does not make the entire fan base up. I think it's how the rest of the fan base react to them.
Two of them.
yeah, but like, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's two idiots. Like, that's not the entire Sheffield Wednesday fan base. Rank says, on a night they were honouring the death of one of their own supporters as well. Like, they were honouring the death of the Sheffield United female player who died at the age of 27 as well. Was it at the 19th minute or was it just before the game? I can't remember, but they were...
It was
before the game, yeah. Yeah, so, like, death was clearly on people's minds, and maybe they were thinking, oh, the views that there, we can have a bit of banter around it, but that's not banter, that's just being vile. And they've kind
of... I like about that, though, Chef Wes actually made a statement.
Saying they're aware.
That they've actually told South Yorkshire Police, but I was looking to see what Gemma replied with, you know, Bradley's mom. She put a statement on Facebook.
Okay.
The Brad Lowry Foundation put a statement out, and they said, that 2 hours ago they put today has not been the Saturday I was expecting. After receiving multiple calls and messages regarding a photo circling on social media, I have received a visit from the Devon Police to check that I am okay. And they have notified myself and Carl that Yorkshire Police are now dealing with the situation and taking it very serious. Understandably, people are angry. If I wasn't so upset, I'd be angry too. Bradley was and still is well loved in the football community, which I am genuinely grateful. But I must ask that everyone... let the police do their job and deal with their low lives. I want to thank Sheffield Wednesday for their quick condemnation and the support their fans have shown. Life, like we always say, cancer has no colours, and as we all know, it can affect anyone at any time.
That's really nice. I know it's like... a horrible situation to go through, but the fact that she's so level-headed and calm about it.
The fact that she's been through that with Bradley, she's obviously a very, very strong woman, and I do believe that she'll be rising above it and say, like, look, I've gone through this with my son for all this time. You know what I mean? The least thing that I'm going to be bothered about is two just wasters like that. Do you know what I'm saying? I think she's obviously a strong enough family to rise above that and not take it personal, because how can you take something personal from two complete imbeciles like that? You just can't, can you?
You can, it depends, but you could. I think, yeah, like you said, she's a strong woman, and it's one of those things that you've got to deal with occasionally. If you've been shoved into public light, there will be cretins that try to attack you for everything and anything.
You could save somebody's life, and someone would complain and take the mick out of it and be nasty about it. As you said, there's just always that small little virus amongst millions that'll cause bother.
So. I think there has been a couple of positives out of the back of this, and that's what I want to move on to, because we want to end it on a positive note. So Sheffield Wednesday and their fans have started to raise funds towards the Bradley Lowry Foundation as well. So these two fans have had the absolute negative effect of just putting their club in disrepute, but the rest of the fans have then picked up and just went, yeah, no, that's not us. Let's show support. So... that for me is a good sign. There's been more funds raised for the foundation, which is, that's the positive out of it. And we can't tar the entire Sheffield Wednesday brush with that. Everybody's just condemning it, and that's what we should be doing. If a Sunderland fan does it, we should condemn them as well. They
Well, we would, wouldn't we? I mean, yeah. we would treat, if it was one of our Sunderland fans, we'd treat them exactly the same way as what we'd treat the Sheffield Wednesday fans.
And it's the same with the players fans, as well, though, mate. It's the same with the players as well. We've had stick in the past, haven't we? A little bit around the whole Adam Johnson situation. But as soon as like things come to light like that, we just disown them. They're not ours anymore. They might have had a good intention to represent the club in a nice way, but then they've just been deplorable humans, and we don't want that in our game. So, yeah, you could always be a fan of a sport or game, but you're not part of the community anymore as soon as you do something that vile. I think that's... Are they still fans of Sheffield Wednesday, do you think?
I wouldn't even say the fans. I don't know who they are or what the purpose is.
Mm.
They're just doing it for attention. I've no idea.
Yeah. Oh...
There's a picture of him that I've seen his profile on Facebook, and you know, his girlfriend or wife, whatever, she's, you know, she's a stunning looking lass, like, but goodness knows what she's bloody thinking now.
You boys hit the photo from her.
Oh, he probably didn't even know it was out there until it was like out there.
I can imagine his inbox will be getting just swamped with hate messages now, which I'm not saying that's right.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, that's going to happen, isn't it?
Yeah. Acacia is apologising to people in the chat for bringing this up, but I think it's one of those things you need to bring up, because if you don't bring it up and you don't discuss it, you'll keep getting it, and people will think it's acceptable to do that. So it might make people angry, and rightly so, it should make people angry, but cut it out. Get it out of the game. Get it out of society. And it's more than a game thing. That, like, how can you? Yeah. Thank you for bringing it up. It was well worth a good chat around it, Acacia. But yeah, those two are not fans. Just at the end of the game. Exactly, Jim. Thank you. So yeah, we have
time to banner now.
Yeah. We have a couple of minutes left, so I want to quickly go over our predictions for the Watford game as well. So. Let's end it on a positive. I think we've already kind of comfortably said we should be beating Watford, or they're there for the taking at the very least. So, Cabby, what's your prediction for the Watford game? Bear in mind they're 20th. We're 4th.
We're struggling at home, don't we? And the fans get hostile. I'm going to go 2-0 Watford.
You've said this, and every single time you've said we've been defeated, we're going to get beaten, we've won, and vice versa. So I'm going to take that as a positive. Ranks is going for 2-1 to the lads. What are you saying, Paul?
Well, to be honest, I actually wasn't watching their game. I was watching Soccer Saturday.
Watch the highlights tonight on YouTube. I'm sure it'll be up there.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. but when I've seen that score... I was like, they're coming to us on Wednesday. So, sorry if any Watford fans are listening. Moby actually wants to keep a winning run. He wants to keep it going this week.
Yeah. You've not got it on cue. Come on. You've not thought about it yet.
3-0 Sunderland.
3-0 Sunderland. Okay. Could we do back to backs again? Do back to back 3-1s? Let's do back to back 3-0s. That'd be nice. Acacia's saying a 3-2 win for the lads on Wednesday evening. I'm going to be slightly respectful of Watford here, and I'm going to say a 1-1 draw. I think our home form needs to be rectified. I'm not sure if we can do it on midweek games. Yeah, weekend games, I think we should be winning every single home stadium alike game. So, weekday, hit and miss. So, I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw. Obviously, hope we win, but yeah, let's be balanced, I guess. Rank says a goal scorer. So, if you said 3-1, who's scoring the goals?
Alex says 3-0.
3-0, sorry, yeah, 3-0.
I'm going to say Burstall will get his first goal at the Stadium of Light.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Jack Clark.
Of course.
And if he starts, I'm going to say Patrick Roberts.
Okay. I think if we're going to score the one goal, I think it's going to be Roosen in the very late in the game. Jacobson 2-1 Sunderland against Watford. That'd be nice. Jack Clark penalty again for Acacia. Can't see Mask to get his first goal and Mason to get his first goal and Paddy Roberts. Cammy, I don't think you said a Sunderland goal, did you? You said 2-0 Watford.
I did. I said 2-0 Watford.
Rather than name Watford players off the top of your head, what do you think is going to cause those two goals to go in?
As I said before on my point, I don't know what it is about home. Well, I do, what should I say? I just think the longer it stays 0-0, the fans will start, will get a bit sort of, not so much hostile, but they'll go quiet, the atmosphere will go tense. And I think away teams absolutely thrive on that. And I think, you know, the likes of Watford have got a bit more spunk in them than Cardiff have. And that's just what I'm thinking could happen.
I kind of disagree a little bit, mate, to be honest. I think
that's what the podcast's all about.
Exactly. We can have differing opinions and still be respectful of each other. What is that? I kind of feel like Watford have stepped down twice since leaving the Premier League. Obviously, last season they finished mid-table. I think they're going to finish like low mid-table this year because they haven't recruited, they haven't like geared themselves up to go back to the Prem. So I think they're there for the taking. But again, I want to be respectful because they've still got some decent Premier League quality players in their roster. So we'll see how that happens. In terms of content that is happening on each of your radars, Paul, what are you doing content wise coming up?
Well, it's 9:30. Me and Brad has actually got a Sheffield Wednesday supporter actually on.
Fantastic.
That fan, by the way, was actually at the game last night.
Very good. So was Acacia.
And on Tuesday we are doing our Watford preview.
There we go. Perfect. You got two things coming up. What about you, Cabby?
Yeah, I'll just be doing lots of short videos as well of all the classic goals, apart from the Premier League, because I don't want another...
You're a good bowler, though.
Yeah, absolutely. The funny videos, I've just put an alternative commentary video up against Sheffield Wednesday. A lot of stuff I'll be putting up, which hopefully makes you chuckle and like the side of...
Sorry, go for it. You just said chuckle, so I chuckled.
That's a chuckle. Chuckle Brothers.
Cool.
So,
to me now, or to you?
Okay, enough's enough.
Fair enough. Coming up on my channel, I've got to do the short for the Sunderland 3 goals against Sheffield Wednesday. We'll do the watch-along against Watford, and then we'll do this, not the same time next week, but on Friday next week. And we'll talk all things about what's happened over the past week. So until then...
Elton John's a Watford supporter.
Oh. Was it 500 candles or something like that?
Is he going to be on the pitch at halftime?
Possibly. Let's be having you. Delia Smith style. Ranks finally wraps up on Sin. I can't see Watford setting up like Cardiff, like Cardiff were clearly doing. They will hit the jackpot on a set piece goal. So let's just hope we keep our heads on Wednesday. Catch you on the watch alongs. See you in a bit. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye. See you later.